committee meeting to order. Can we stand and do the pledge, please? Bruce, I'll give it to you.
With me, please, I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, is this thing okay out there? Can you hear me okay? It doesn't sound good up here, I don't know. Okay, Rob, roll call, please.
Roll call. Director Zimmer?
Here.
Director Garfinkel?
Here.
Director Gibson?
Here.
Chairperson O'Hilsky?
Yeah, present. Okay, so we'll have board member comments. We'll start with Mark. Now I can hear the microphone, so.
Thank you. Just starting off, we want to make a structure change for Golden State. Our alternate is currently Rob Hanford, and we're going to change that to Tony Lindstrom, and we'll submit a letter doing that. And then our next meeting scheduled on the 26th, I'm going to be unavailable for that meeting. And so I wanted, with that being Tony's first meeting, if we were open to changing the date on that meeting or see what everybody else's schedule would be. He can fill in for that, or if there's any other conflicts or things of that nature, we could address that now. You know, and along that line, I was thinking with the monthly meetings, they come so fast, and having the deliverables in a productive meeting and making sure that we have substance, that we might want to look at restructuring our meeting schedules, looking at something where we have scheduled bi-monthly meetings and we hold special meetings instances when we have deliverables or want to have a meeting and actually present to the public a presentation or something like that. So I just wanted to put that out there for right now.
And Mr. Chair, just one recommendation that staff can maybe put that on as a short agenda item for our next meeting so we can discuss our calendar.
Yeah, and I was just going to point out, you said you're not going to be here on the 26th, but our next meeting is the 19th. So.
Right. That was my math as well.
I'm sorry, that's right. The 19th, I was going to suggest the 26th.
Oh, okay.
So our meeting on the 19th, you're right.
All right.
But the date I was going to suggest would be the 26th.
Okay, well, we can talk about that.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you for catching it.
I also have a conflict on the 19th, so I really would like it to be changed also.
Okay, Bruce.
I got nothing on the 19th, but then nothing is loading on my calendar, so maybe I'm out of a job or something. I don't know. So I'm open, and my alternate's here to help, and I have nothing else to add.
Yeah, I think that's something that I'll work out with Rob, and then we'll send out an email on that because I'm not available on the 26th. I got Cal Lafco.
Okay, we'll work it out.
Yeah. So we'll see what we can work out here. Okay. All right. So that's the board member comments. The consent agenda, we have two items on there. The approval of the minutes from our July 27th meeting, the approval of Warren's budget updates, and invoice register through August 2016. If we have questions, then we'll have public comment, and then we'll bring it back for discussion. Yes, Bill.
Item 6 in the minutes, and from there throughout the rest of the minutes, you did a real number on my last name. I appreciate you get that squared away.
Oh, did spell check not? Okay, thank you.
Autocorrect's not working.
Oh, boy, yes.
Do we have any other questions? Okay, so we'll have public comment on the two items on the consent agenda, the minutes, the warrants budget, budget update and invoice register. Okay, no public comment. We'll close public comment, bring it back to the board for discussion and a motion.
I'll move approval of consent.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any more discussion?
No.
Yes?
No.
Okay. We're we're not doing a resolution, so do we have unanimous consent on these two items?
Yes.
Okay. All right, so those two are approved by unanimous consent. That brings us to you, Rob, Executive Director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This report will perhaps be just a little bit lengthier than my normal brevity, because I did want to talk a little bit about the grant opportunities that we're pursuing. So attached to the Executive Director's report, and there are some agenda packages in the back. I think we made 10 if folks want to have a hard copy. We won't have enough for everybody, but feel free to grab one. As you recall, we've hired water systems consulting for our grant work to pursue a number of different avenues to fund some of our projects. As we mentioned last time, we submitted a pre-application under the Prop 1 implementation cycle, which is coming very quickly here. And I think WC did a very nice job outlining all of the different grant programs in a memo that I've attached to my executive director's report. So feel free to peruse that at your convenience. But the best opportunity for immediate funding would be under the implementation of Prop 1. So after submitting a pre-application, we've been getting a lot of good questions from the state. They sort of changed their process as opposed to you just throwing a grant application into the dark and hoping that you get noticed. They're now going through each pre-application, looking at the content, thinking about how it best meets the grant criteria, and giving some guidelines to each applicant so they can do the best job that they can on the full application. And so they've been asking a lot about Los Osos and seawater intrusion and Zone D and expansion wells, so they're coming up to speed. We expect that in the next week or two, we will have their formal reply to us, and we hope an invitation to submit a full grant application. After that, they'll give us 45 days to put our best foot forward with that application, and we may need some consultant help at that time. But for now, we're waiting for the state to respond. I did want to note that there are other programs that offer both grants and loans, even focused on energy as well as water, that WSC is keeping their eye on for us. And so there will be other opportunities coming up. And a number of community members have also been sending me, as they see something or hear about something that appears to apply. It may seem redundant when you do it, but it actually is quite helpful, since there's just so many opportunities out there. There's no guarantee that our web catches everything. So do send those on to me if you see something that's of interest. And so we hope that we'll be well positioned to compete effectively in that rounds of grants. Of course, a lot of the grants these days do require matching funds, so therein is our challenge. So we'll be coming back to talk more about that. We provide a little update on the zone of benefit analysis as a follow-up to our meeting with Taussig, where we heard about the different options back in July. We don't want to go far beyond my written comments, but in essence, staff is looking very hard at the viability of a administratively focused vote, and given what we've seen elsewhere in the county, we were, I think, giving some pause to whether a two-thirds majority would be successful if you were just going out for an administrative cost type vote. So there's discussion at the staff level, and we'll be bringing that back when we have further clarity, but know that that's being worked on. Had a number of questions out there on the potential creek discharge, and we are receiving detailed questions back from the Department of Drinking Water, Division of Drinking Water, from the state, and they are looking to wrap up their formal comments to us, I believe, in the next 2 to 3 weeks, and they're giving a good hard look to our creek discharge proposal, as well as some of the travel time estimates and and the potentially impacted wells. Annual report is very close. We produced at the staff level a final draft and have distributed to the staff people who were doing the final review on that. If all goes well, that could be up and on the website as early as Friday. We tried to have it for this meeting, but we're not able to do that. We gave you a brief update of the basin boundary modification process. They've closed that first period, and the county is already talking about how to manage the fringe area in the basin, since the request was denied, or at least currently is in the status of being denied. And so county will be holding public meetings out there, trying to understand the needs of the fringe area. And as we have further information, we'll bring that back to the committee to talk about. We've had some folks ask me what the status of the Los Osos wastewater project is in terms of the flow. And when I heard, I thought this is great stuff. Everybody will be interested in this, so I included in my report. I know many of you have connected over the last number of months and
or days.
Yeah, mine just got connected over about 2 weeks ago. We have about 1,900 connections that have been made. Some of them are neighborhood connections. And within those 1,900, about 2,300 homes and businesses are represented. So that's getting to be a significant fraction of our total.
Approaching halfway.
We're approaching the halfway mark pretty fast. And, of course, the county's watching flows carefully, since previously all we had was estimates for years and conjecture as to what the flow, the indoor flow might be. So I can tell you that at 200,000 gallons per day on weekends, and even less during the weekdays, the flows are less than projected. So I know those of you with a calculator are quickly running the numbers, but there are some very very water-conserving indoor use going on in the community. So we'll continue to track that, as well as look at the water quality. In terms of where that effluent is going, they did start up the Broderson percolation site about a month ago, and so that's been functioning well to date. Of course, too early to tell. It's just getting going, but the inspection ports are dry and the water is going in the ground, and they are flowing up to 400,000 gallons per day as they take the storage pond and begin moving that back into the basin to recharge our upper aquifer there. So interesting update. We'll probably do this periodically as new information becomes available, so you can keep tabs on the Los Osos wastewater project. So WSC's memo is attached. Feel free to review that as at your convenience, and we may, as we have applications due, bring that back for future action. Be happy to answer any questions.
Yeah. Bill?
You say it says that we already submitted for the grant under Prop 1, but I'm curious, as a committee formed by the court, are we eligible for that grant?
We did look at that, and in the pre-application, you don't have to meet that threshold of having a very clear applicant. So we put the district and or the county as being the legal entities. Okay. It's just the pre-app, and so when they come back and invite us for the full app, we'll have to address that issue.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, can I follow up on that question? Because we talked about the necessity of doing a JPA or something like that. Probably should defer to legal counsel on that. But or Bruce, you have updated.
Well, I was just going to ask. That was one thing for follow up. At some point, we were exploring going what it would take and pros and cons on JPA, weren't we? So to know a little bit about whether there's been any action in that direction.
For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, in an acronym, it's Joint Power Authority.
Right, thank you.
With the various agencies involved, because part of our discussion before was we may actually have to have that entity to be eligible for the grant funding.
Right, as a group, we could certainly apply
individually.
As either a district project or a county project. We'd have that option. For instance, the district, you know, is already pursuing Zone D well, an expansion well, and so we could piggyback on that. The monitoring well portion of the application, that could be the county.
So portion it out by the various entities.
But if we do end up needing a JPA, we'll bring that forward.
Okay, great. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, we'll take public comment on the executive director's report.
Patrick McGibney, just a quick comment. Rob, I'd like to know what these grants are going to be used for. That we're applying for. We did receive a grant from DWR for $3.4 million with matching funds from the county for $400,000. That was to be used, basically was a conservation grant to be used for conservation purposes and could be used for other things. My understanding is that grant money was put into construction instead, and we only have about $400,000 left over for conservation means, and that we're trying to raise more money to do that. I don't think that the community should be stuck with mismanagement from the county involving that. So I'm just curious, what are these other grant funds going to be used for, and where are we going to get money for conservation? Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Yeah. Jeff?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, committee members. My name is Jeff Edwards, and I have a couple comments and then a handful of questions. With regard to the grants, I would like to remind this group that not only do we have to have local match funds, but we also have to have a shovel-ready project. So it may be a little premature to be exploring a lot of grants unless we actually have something to do. Secondly, with regard to the status of the zone of benefit analysis, I would like to at some point hear from this group that you've officially dropped the special district as a means of securing administrative costs. I will tell you, and perhaps Mr. Gibson can comment, but the Board of Supervisors will be taking up a matter under the Water Conservation Flood Control District in October regarding the use of their reserves, and I would submit to you that their reserves arguably could be used for funding certainly administration here. A handful of questions. I'm curious what the next step for the creek discharge is and how quickly we might be able to actually have that project shovel ready, whereby we could apply for one or more grants or a loan perhaps. There is some seawater intrusion loan money available, up to $10 million for projects like this. The annual report, has that been submitted to the court yet? That's my question. And then lastly, the basin boundary modification request. We've spent an inordinate amount of time and resources on that. I'd like to know where that is. Is it dead? Are we going to just simply work with the basin, the Bulletin 118 basin boundary as we know it, or are we still pursuing some modification? Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Good afternoon, Lindy Owen. I was wanting to, it's good to hear that the recycled water is flowing, and I'm wondering, is it going to go to Broderson first and then eventually go to the schools, or how soon are you testing the quality of it before you release it to the schools, and is there any update on the possibility of it being used in residential use with a truck delivery, and any more discussion about providing out of the conservation money that now can be used for outdoors conservation, using any of that money to put in some delivery stations along the many miles of purple pipe that are already laid in the community. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay, we'll bring them back. Rob, you have some good questions to answer.
Yes, we do. So in terms of the grant, the pre-application, we were quite broad and listed all the basin plan programs that were identified in the basin plan for current development. So the expansion wells, the monitoring wells. If we can do some conservation, supplementation of conservation funds, we would look to do that as well. So basically the broad measures in the basin plan with a focus on those east side expansion wells. The next step in the creek discharge process would be to receive the state's formal review. If that review is positive, then it'll come back to this committee along with staff's projection of next steps. Environmental review would be that next step to, as I think was alluded to, make the project more shovel-ready than it is right now. So as soon as we have that, we will bring that back for discussion. Has the annual report been submitted to the court? No, we'll wait till it's final, and then we'll submit it one time to both our BMC website and the court. And then are we still pursuing a basin modification? I'd say as it sits today, not really. Not pursuing that. There may be other opportunities. There's many basins throughout California. I know there are folks here who are working on multiple basins where they have some of the same issues. And so seeing how those issues shake out in terms of these fringe areas, I think will be something that the committee will need regular updates on. We don't have perfect clarity on how that's going to go down today, but as we get it, we'll provide that to you. A question about the wastewater effluent, whether that was flowing to the schools yet. Not yet. My understanding is that they're going through what's called the Title 22 certification process that you go through with the state when you have a new wastewater plant. When that's done, they'll be able to begin delivering recycled water to the schools and be able to consider this issue of having a fill station in town. I know that that was something county staff had talked about. Along with their certification process, there'll be discussions with the state as to whether they can pull that off. I know I've heard even in the last few weeks and months some different legal theories as to whether to what level you can use recycled water in a single-family home. And so we'll be having the county resolve that issue and bring that back forward to the BMC when resolved. So hopefully I answered the questions.
Great. Thank you. Any more comments from the board? Yeah, Mark?
Yeah, just about the shovel-ready projects for the grant funding. Should we be working on a list of those projects and actually identifying those projects specifically for the response? Because there's a short window. What do we have 45 days to submit our final?
Yeah, what they'll do is they'll look at the list of projects we did submit, which come right out of the basin plan with costs and everything else, and they'll see which are the strongest in terms of the eligibility for the grant. So they may come back and say, boy, we really like this monitoring well in Cuesta by the Sea, but we don't know about your eastern expansion wells. So depending on the nature of their response, we'll fine-tune our application.
All right.
And shovel-ready is one aspect of competition. So the more ready you are, the better you compete. And so there are multiple rounds of this. This is round one. And there will be further implementation rounds where we can come back and stay in front of the state on these projects as our readiness progresses.
Yeah, and that was kind of my point, that if we really had a project that we could take some initial steps on and be more prepared and ready to go, and if there's something that we can be doing in the meantime, I think that would be helpful to be doing that.
Right.
And then the other... regarding the basin boundary modification, did we ever get a response or an explanation of why the modification request was unsuccessful? Did that come to us of a clear understanding of that?
Yeah, I mean,
that's why I've been looking at you the whole.
Carolyn and Kathy are here. Feel free to jump up to the podium, and we did get a response.
It may be clear, but it's not necessarily. Credible. I don't know what's the right
word. Or intellectually satisfying.
Is intellectually satisfying. Yeah. Carolyn can speak.
Yes. Again, yeah. That's why I've been staring at you.
Yeah.
I wanted to get you
I was
up
just
there.
Just waiting for you guys to let us know if you want us to speak. So Carolyn Berg, County Public Works, and so we've already spoken about the fact that the Department of Water Resources published their draft recommendations and denied our boundary modification request. Of course. We were told during public meetings that we would get some form of written reasoning why that basin boundary modification was denied. And have since learned that we wouldn't actually get any formal letter of any kind, so we never did receive something to us as the requesting agency. However, the state did update their basically their table of recommended boundary modifications. So now it doesn't just say denied or draft denial. It has several listed reasons, and basically I think they mostly point towards the scientific justification and them it not necessarily meeting the standards of DWR. There's specific language, maybe 3 to 4 sentences on that, but I think the staff report speaks to it, but we have been told by DWR that they would be publishing their final boundaries by the end of this month. So we haven't seen those yet, and I don't know that they'll provide any additional reasoning at that time. But they have told us that in the future, if the basin was interested in pursuing a boundary modification, you know, that their staff is available to work with us on understanding what meets their standards of being considered a basin. So not a lot of details, but that's the short of it.
If I could expand on that, staff's done an amazing job trying to move this forward. They've asked 3 times and been told no 3 times, and so we sort of get it that this round seems unlikely. I think it was Carolyn and Wade, or Carolyn and Courtney, went before the California Water Commission, who advises DWR, got a polite hearing, but no action. But basically, there's state criteria says that if there's a layer of alluvium that's so thick, then that continues a basin. And I think what we're seeing is that in order to pursue the modification again, which I think is the right thing to do, we're going to have to do some tests, some dynamic modeling in the area east to really convince DWR that water does not communicate between the eastern fringe and the main part of the basin. In the meantime, we're getting ready to figure out how to deal with the eastern side as part of the basin and what the appropriate response out there is. So it's frustrating, but I think it's manageable. Would be a lot simpler if we didn't have to do this, but we're going to work a strategy forward on this.
So for the interim, or maybe permanent, we'll be dealing with the current boundaries.
Yes.
Right. And the fringe areas will be dealt with separately.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the county is doing that in other basins, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Indeed, they are.
Okay, any more? Yeah, Bill?
I know in our list of projects, we put them in as a bucket list, but have we... or have you in any way try to prioritize? Obviously, we couldn't start them all at the same time. Which ones we would want to go with first?
You know, I think these are different in character. And so depending on how that response comes through, we may want to focus more of our energy on specific projects and really go hard after it as opposed to the shotgun approach. I mean, if you look at the list for... balancing the groundwater basin for current development, it really is pretty focused. Finish Program A, and those are ongoing. That's been listed. Finish Program C, and expand our monitoring understanding and accomplish conservation. Those are the big projects that are in the basin plan. Add to that the potential for a creek augmentation, and you don't have a long list, and so we'll see what their feedback is, and then we'll bring that back to see if we want to focus or continue in the broad suite of projects. I think we want to take the long view as well. If we don't get funded in this round, we've raised visibility for what we're trying to accomplish here. At first, they were going, seawater intrusion, what are you trying to do? They're just trying to understand a staff there, and so we really want to elevate the visibility of Los Osos when we do have a match available.
Okay. Anything else?
No, sir.
All right. You're off the hook on that one, Rob. Now we'll move to the action items. First one is 7A, review the alternatives for Basin Management Committee input for the Los Osos Community Plan update.
Great. I'm going to have Jenna come up and help me a little bit on this. So in the preparation of this agenda item, we wanted to emphasize the working nature of this particular Basin Management Committee, as opposed to some other boards where staff does all the work and you just get to make a decision.
Take the credit.
Just get them blessed.
Yeah.
Right. Because the needs are so different among the different members, and this issue is a hot potato, and staff wanted to make sure we were providing the options that you really wanted to see as a committee. So I guess one of the tenets of staff work is don't bring too many options to a board, so we're going to ignore that for today and bring you what hopefully will be a good, robust discussion of the various elements that would go into formal feedback from the committee to the Los Osos Community Plan. Last time, I think Director Zimmer had mentioned, hey, you have these options, but now we're already talking about hybrids and mixing and matching. Can you bring us a matrix so we can talk about each element of the decision individually and say, well, we like that element, and so we can put it together into one set of options. And so that's what we've tried to do. You have in front of you a staff note which has a table, which is not long, and the table does not show well on the screen. So, yeah, there it is. So focus your eyes, squint. Again, there were 10 copies back there. We will try to be very verbally descriptive with this as we go, so that those of you who don't have it in writing in front of you, we'll just use that as sort of a, so you can see the overall grid, but we'll be very descriptive verbally. And so what I was hoping Jenna could do for me, because she helped as staff to just outline the different elements that we'll be talking about today, just verbally go through those and then come back to me and I'll walk you through each one to see if we can make progress on this to get to closure today. We'll see. It's a little button.
I found it right there. All right. So I think the idea is, and I understand that the matrix is a little bit confusing to just look at, but we, in the staff report, set forth sort of an example. So I'm going to try to walk through the example right now to explain how a development standard can be crafted. And then after that, we'll go back to Rob and hopefully have a discussion about the different criteria that can go into a recommended development standard and maybe even come away from the meeting with a couple of different alternatives that we can then bring back at a follow-up meeting to decide on, vote on, and adopt as the recommended development standard. And just so as a threshold, this is not exhaustive of all the different criteria, and there's a table and a couple of slides that actually has some blank spots. So if there's discussion and there's thoughts that there may be a criteria that's missing and we want to include in the matrix to discuss while, you know, the development standard is being crafted, we can do that as well. So the idea, just as an overview, the idea is that each one of the cells in this table is a separate criteria, and so you can choose one or more criteria from any or all columns. So let's just walk through the example that was included in the staff report, and that example is to allow further development subject to Title 19 water conservation retrofit requirements, but only after the chloride metric, the water level metric, and the nitrate metric have met the basin plan goals for a period of 3 consecutive years, and the governor has repealed the drought state of emergency. And also to restrict growth to 5 equivalent development units per year and require the county to review this standard every 5 years. So to understand how that works with the matrix, we go, and you can see I've highlighted the different criteria that make up this example development standard. You could also do a very simple development standard that, you know, for example, just said, you know, the development threshold is subject to the chloride metric, the water level metric, and the nitrate metric meeting the basin plan goal for 1 year, and the county should, you know, the growth is restricted to 10 equivalent development units per year, and the county should review the standard every 3 years. It can be really anything. So it can be very detailed, or it can be more open-ended. So with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Rob. And here is, during discussions, you can see there's a little bit. I know it's hard to read the different cells. Do you think it would be helpful to walk through each of the cells?
I'll be okay. Descriptive. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I think folks will understand. I think looking out among the audience, many of you are going to recognize some of these different elements here. I thought it would probably be prudent to start with the most critical element, and that is the development threshold. So I'm going to go a little bit out of order here, but because this one I think is the most yields the most discussion among the public, that perhaps we could start here. So when we look at allowing new development, the Basin Plan, as you all know, has a number of measured metrics. It also has calculated or theoretical metrics, but a number of measured metrics that we are tracking now as part of our annual report process. The chloride metric is familiar to most, and that's a measure of the chloride levels in our lower aquifer. And as we see seawater intrusion abate, that chloride metric will improve and eventually will meet the standard that's listed in the Basin Plan. So that's one metric. And when I open this back up for committee discussion, the question will be, do we include the chloride metric within our recommended development standard or not? So that will be the way the question will be framed. A very similar issue with the water level metric, which again depicts water levels in our lower aquifer and could be seen as a leading indicator, whereas water levels will recover first and then chlorides will follow in general. And so that would be a metric that could be used. It will respond more quickly to changes in the basin than chloride. But again, the question will be, should we include that metric or not in our recommendation? The nitrate metric is somewhat different in its character because it does not reflect seawater intrusion, doesn't even reflect overpumping necessarily. It's not so much a water supply issue, it's a water quality issue that we expect to improve now that wastewater project is implemented and septic discharges have for the most part ceased over the basin. So that's one that we included for completeness, but because it doesn't have a specific water supply element to it, that's one you could include but don't have to when you're looking at new development. So we have those measured metrics. They're well defined in the Basin Plan, and you can either require that they be met, and we'll talk about the time over which they need to be met here in a second. You can either require that they be met or that they show some defined improvement. And that will be your option when it comes to metrics. So probably worth stopping for some discussion there, but I also wanted to note in the matrix that you could also look at the level of readiness in terms of your projects that are complete. We have projects A and C that are well on their way in terms of program A, but we're only a third done with program C. So again, as a development threshold, you could require that those recommended projects simply be completed before any development is recommended by this committee. Just to remind the audience that this committee is advisory only, ultimately to the Board of Supervisors and to the Coastal Commission, who will be the entity that would ultimately look at the Los Osos Community Plan. So, Mr. Chair, I thought one way to do this would be to have a little committee discussion over each element, each column, get some feedback, and then...
Well, my only issue with that is we need to get public comment.
At some point in the process.
I'm trying to figure out what the best way to do this is, I think.
If it's not too much, we could try to have some committee discussion so the public can hear, go for public comment on that element, and see if how our time shakes out.
Yeah, but, I mean, Brown Act, we have to have the discussion after public comment.
No, I don't think... Yeah, well... Mr. Chairman, if I might, we can have whatever, I think, whatever discussion we want before and after public comment. I think the other thing is to try to set some expectation of how far we're going to get on this today. And we don't have to finalize it. I'm not sure that planning's need to have that input is really crucial until early next year,
right,
before heading to the Planning Commission. And the third spot is that you rightly point out that the Coastal Commission is the entity that's really going to weigh in on this. So if I might, Mr. Chairman, just let me frame a couple of thoughts here. One of them is I don't think we should, in delivering a recommendation, that we ought to get too detailed in our first cut at the recommendation. I think we need to give some general guidance toward planning, and let's see how Coastal reacts to it. I think that there's probably going to be a need to educate both the planning side, the Planning Commission, my colleagues, on the details of the Basin Management Plan and what metrics there are. And I think we then respond in our recommendation. I would envision it a bit more like a conversation here as we drill down to what exactly. So within what I see on the slides here, I'd make two observations. I don't think the nitrate metric is really likely to be relevant, frankly, in the sense that it is a water quality issue, but it doesn't affect the water supply. I mean, it's not a seawater intrusion issue. It's an upper aquifer issue. And new development is not going to materially contribute one way or the other toward changing the nitrate metric. So I don't think that one is probably one we need to bring in any kind of level of conflict. Obviously, the chloride metric is the main issue here. The water level issue is a supporting water level metric is a supporting indicator of we need some consistency in the findings and see how it goes. So I would focus on the chloride metric. And then the last thing I see in the slide, because I can see at a distance, is that the Title 19 water conservation retrofit requirements are in their reference. That program is essentially at the end of its run. And I think that we're finding from the county side that there are very few targets for conservation left to create the credits to justify new development. So I think our recommendation would be to some again general guidance on some level of conservation has been achieved. And conservation as part of this is going to be very important, of course. But I think we probably aren't going to find it useful to reference Title 19. I don't think planning is going to mesh that in, because into the Title 23, which is the LCP, because we want to keep that separate. That's our building code, and we want to focus on aspects of our local coastal program on that. So those are my initial thoughts as I read the outline here.
But before we go on, Carrie, I know last time you were here you talked about the schedule. Could you maybe just give us an overview on the schedule again, so we can, as we go through our discussions here, we can have a little better framework for the time frame involved here. Sorry to put you on the spot, Carrie.
That's why she's here.
I can give you, Carrie Brown, County Planning Staff, I can just give you an estimate of when we're expecting. We're expecting to go to Planning Commission in April of next year. So we're right now reviewing the administrative draft of the environmental impact report for the community plan. So we are also currently preparing the public hearing draft based on the mitigation measures that are coming out. So...
what's your expectation on the public hearing draft?
I would say February.
So that's really, we would need to get our comments to you prior to the finalization of that draft.
Yeah, we would like to include your recommendation in that draft,
okay,
if possible.
I just want to make sure we know what time frame we're working under. So, I mean, that gives us a little more time, so I think we can have more detailed conversations over a couple of meetings rather than. So, thank you, Carrie.
Sure.
And if Carrie could stick around, and I would certainly yield to colleagues on the committee if I could. The Basin Management Plan is going to appear in our local coastal program possibly in a couple of different ways. You talk about mitigations. The EIR should be referencing the Basin Management Plan as a mitigation against whatever future development we propose in the LCP. Is that correct?
Correct.
And it also will be an aspect of standards of development within the LCP itself. That's it's a bit of a sort of nerdy subtlety, I think, but it shows up in two places. The first of which is the draft EIR, though.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. So you're going to be here for a while, though, right?
I'm here.
Okay. Thank you, Carrie. So, Mark, let's just go like an overview discussion right now to set the parameters for how we're going to go move forward. I know you were the one that asked Rob to talk about the matrix. Yeah. Both of you did last time. So,
right. Thank you. The objective of the matrix is really to set the standards so they're measurable. They're objective standards that draw a clear line. So when we're working through this, you know, I'd really like to keep that in mind. Just looking at the road that we're about to pave is a big road for this community. That, you know, we're setting some standards or giving some guidance on the direction of that, and I think we need to keep that in mind. You know, there are funding opportunities that come from development and potentially could help offset some cost, and we need to keep all of those objectives in mind as we work through this. But the main thing is that we really want to create a standard that is something that people can look at and know that they're going to be able to meet those objectives or not, and not to have something that's flexible in there that's going to not allow us to meet those. So that's pretty much my comment right now. We'll work through it as we hear public comment.
Bill?
No extra, except I did have input on the metrics, so maybe I should wait till you're done. We're done going through this list, or shall I?
Yeah, I mean, Bill provided a PowerPoint to us, wanted to talk about climate, and had some formal comments that he wanted to present as part of this agenda item. And so we can, it might be good to do those prior to public comment so that the folks can see what was
envisioned. Well, yeah, I think, I mean, one of the things where I was coming from when I asked that question originally, I want to make sure that the public has an opportunity to comment on everything. I don't want to have us, you know, have something new come up after the public comment period. So okay. I'd like them, my goal would be to get everything out on the table.
Good.
So when we have public comment that they're able to comment on everything.
I think in that regard, perhaps I'll just spend another minute to go through. Maybe we will defer to a future meeting things like growth rate and frequency of review, everything on the right-hand side there. And let me just mention two other elements, and then we'll let Bill talk a little bit about climate. So we talked about metrics, and within that discussion of metrics, there's a column for time where this committee can think about, do we need to meet certain metrics for a year, for 2 years, for three? What is the appropriate time level for each metric that you're identifying? I think we had an option last time that talked about 2 years, but there's no magic to that number. We have a whole column that talks about environmental factors, and this will go to Bill's PowerPoint that he can present, and that is, are there issues external to the measured elements in the basin that we should be considering? For instance, the district has a water shortage contingency plan that has rainfall as one element of what drought stage we're in. And in certain drought stages, development ceases. So do we want to have a climate-based metric of some kind that goes into this process. And I understand we may not get closure on that today, but we'd like to have the discussion. And then, of course, statewide, we have formal governor declarations of drought and formal status for that drought. And so that could be another measurable element that can be used. And beyond that, just so the public has the full range of issues to comment on, we talked a little bit last time about having programs within the basin plan that are not contemplated for existing development, such as program B as in boy, upper aquifer supplies, that could be incrementally constructed as part of development approval. We thought a little bit about that based on public comment last time. We do believe that in some increment we could do meaningful program B projects. Perhaps that's 100 or 200 dwelling units that could be meaningfully done as discrete projects. If this committee decides it wants to require some specific projects that go along with development. And be happy to have Bill provide his slides now. And
wait, could and yeah, you want, I was following along well until you just threw that last comment out there. Could you? I'm not sure exactly I understood.
Yeah, let me rewind it and say it more clearly. So the basin plan contemplates the full completion of programs A and C. In order to balance the basin for current development. So those programs are really intended for the existing population. Programs B and D, the basin plan indicates, may be better suited for future development. Program B was one large project in the basin plan, but it really can be implemented in phases to support incremental development. That's one element of this that the committee could consider.
No, I appreciate the clarification.
Yeah, thank you. Bill, we're going to find your slides here. And
okay. While he's doing that, I'll just begin. After our meeting in July, and we talked about further development, I really had a lot of thought about what we're trying to predict the future. And how do you predict the future? It's pretty hard. And I look at the metrics that we have, and of course the chloride and nitrate metric are how we are today. They're the quality of our water. And to some extent the water level metric is also the quality of our water. The whole thing can be going down and still meet these metrics. So I thought that what we should also add is the effect of getting new water into the aquifer. And so what I come up with, what I'm calling a climate metric, but it's factoring rainfall as part of a guide to our development. And we look at this first slide is the data from the Morro Bay Fire Station going back to 1975. Which is closest to ours because we don't have anything in Los Osos that has this history. And you can see rainfall goes all over the map. But the other part is temperature. And several people here in the were part of a EPA experiment that they did, I think, in 2013. We talked about what the projections might be for 2050 and 2099 based on different factors. And although I was not in those meetings, out of those meetings, they came two things I think are quite important. First of all, the only freshwater input we have to our basin is rainfall. That's a given. We have no other source of water. But then it brings up, it says, increased population growth combined with drought, increased drought, and increased temperature. Because as the temperature goes up, of course, evaporation increases. It's a very slow thing, but it goes on. And so on this slide here, you have air temperature over the over that those 40 years, and you have rainfall over the 40 years. And as I say, it's a rather jumbled graph, but I took it and put a trend lines on both of them, Well, first, the top is the trend line on average temperature. And if you run through the trend line there, you can see that it's trending up. And it's you can't probably read the bottom line, but it's averaging about 4/100ths of a degree per year, because we know climate change will be very slow. They talk about eons. So, but it is definitely going up every year over the 40-year period. The temperature is going up. And during that same period, if we do the same trend line on water, it trends down. And the average decrease in water over the 40-year period in rainfall has been about a tenth of an inch a year in our rainfall. But this is a 40-year period that we're looking at. When we go back to the basin plan, we had this chart in our basin plan, which when it first came out, we all shook our heads and tried to figure out what's it saying and how's it going. But as you look to it more carefully, it makes a lot of sense, because it's the balance of the basin. And the important figure there is in the top, it's called PPIR, precipitation and irrigation return flow. And of that number, 90% is precipitation going into the basin. And so out of this, when Cleve Harris put this together, they used, from the same table that I showed you previously, they used, based the average rainfall from 1981 to 2010 as 17.48 inches of rain that we've had. And that was the basis for doing this this modeling of the water. But if in the last 5-6 years, we've really started going down. And so the 17.48 inches, you can see, we haven't hit that mark since 2004, right? So we really need, I think, to have Cleve Harris run this model again with the lower flows to see whether what really the basin balance might be. But on top of it, I said, well, year to year, we know we can't go jumping in and out. And so I put two lines. Go back one second. There's two lines there. A five-year running average and a 10-year running average. So in other words, you take off the first year and you add the new year, and you just keep moving it forward. And that's what the rainfall now looks like on a running average. And 5 years, I figure, is probably more easy to look at and more justifiable if we use that as possibly a metric, because that's the blue line there of the changes in 5 years. And we dip below that 17.48 metric in the 5 years in 2002. Since 2002, we've not received, our average has been a good deal less than the 17.48 inches. And even if we looked at the 10-year average, it would be 2006 when that dips below, because obviously the longer the average is, the slower the changes. So using the 5-year span, and we put the we calculate as a bar chart what actually fell, and you can see that from if it was beginning in 2009, which would have been 2005 to 2009, through the period 2011-2015, that 5-year average never hits 17.48 inch amount of rainfall. In other words, we never got as much rain as predicted in the model in our basin plan. If we get really exuberant and say, okay, let's take some guesses at what might happen. And so what I did is said, okay, let's say beginning this year we get at least 17.48 inches of rain for the next 5 years. And you can see what happens. It slowly goes up, and it won't be until 2020 that we actually get back to the 17.48-inch average, which the basin basin balance plan. So as a result of that, I really believe that we should have a climate metric to run. We should first of all run the water balance model for these different amounts of rainfall, and then determine really what we need. Is 17.48 the right amount? I think Cleith Hazard or the committee needs to decide that. But the bottom line would be, I don't think we could afford to have new development until we know we're going to have the water here.
Mr. Chair, now might be a good time if you are prepared to take some public comment and then bring it back for committee discussion.
So you've got everything out, pardon me, everything's out on the table for today's discussions? Okay. All right, with that then we'll go to public comment. And if you have any questions, let us know and we'll try to get Rob to answer those either at the end of the discussion or next meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon again. My name is Jeff Edwards. My understanding that this topic is about future development. And if that's true, what we're talking about is the build-out of the community. I, for one, would like to see some numbers. What are we talking about in terms of build-out in people and water consumption? Because that's really, I think, critical to this conversation. I've done some math, and I would share with you that the total build-out of this community under the current general plan, commercial and residential, would require less than 200 acre-feet of water per year. It's about 20% of what we're using domestically right now. I think that's critical. Additionally, we're talking about metrics. I don't know why we haven't talked about the basin yield metric. As you know, that measures consumption as a relationship to the safe yield of the basin. In the basin management plan, 80% or 80 has been used as a safe realm, and I would support that concept. In my view, what we ought to be doing is using the basin yield metric or weighting that predominantly and weighting the chloride and water level metrics much less. Because isn't it really what matters is how much water are we using against our safe yield? To me, that's what matters. So I, for one, would use the basin yield metric as the predominant measure of how we view development in the future. Also, Mr. Miller mentioned programs A and C or the completion of programs A and C that would facilitate or meet the needs of current development. I would submit to you that completions of programs A and C would not only meet current demands, but also quite likely future demands when coupled with further conservation. And here's why I would like to disagree with Mr. Gibson. Title 19's not done. We just need a new generation Title 19. There is anywhere from 150 to 250 acre feet of additional conservation per year in this community. So the idea that we've soaked every drop out of the town is simply not accurate, not even close. Again, I would weight the basin yield metric. Let's figure out what kind of numbers we're really talking about in terms of build out, because as you've already heard, pinning the tail on the donkey at the Coastal Commission is not very fun. And whatever they're presented needs to be well thought out, because you only get one or two shots at it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are you timing or am I timing?
Patrick McGibney, I would like to just basically thank Supervisor Gibson for his comment about Title 19 has run its course. It's one thing I agree with what he said. I'd like to disagree, actually, with our last speaker. Using the basin metric, the amount of water that's been used, I'd like to actually get my garden back not a lawn, but I'd like to have my garden back. And I've been saving a lot of water, not so we can have future development, so we can save our basin. So I don't think if we're using how much water is being used is really going to be a good indicator on how much more we can build or extend the population. I'd also like to thank Marshall for your comment about public comment after the board has talked a little bit. And I don't know if there is a Brown Act ruling that you have to do board first or comment first or whatever. But, you know, I think it's really important to be able to involve the community in this discussion. And if we have an agenda item and then we have public comment and then the board talks about it and then makes a decision, we don't have an opportunity to talk about your discussion. And I would bring one thing as an example to that is when we were talking about filming the meetings here. It was a nice discussion. The community said it's something that we should really do, and then it went to agenda item. You guys discussed it, and there was a motion, I think, that Bill made that we should be able to do this with certain parameters and stuff. And you were just about ready to vote on that, and then Supervisor Gibson said, well, what about how long is this going to last? I mean, maybe people just want to get up here and talk, and it's going to waste a lot of our time, and, you know, yada, 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 and maybe we should just do it until the end of the year. Well, as a community, we didn't get to discuss that or comment on that part. So I would like to propose that, you know, before you make a vote on an agenda item, you have public comment on the discussion that you had with that also. Dealing with the matrix, I think it's really important that we do have a climate matrix on here. I'd like to disagree with Bill on one point on that. Temperature change has historically been really low, but since climate change has started to happen, the temperature has changed much quicker than it has historically. So I don't think, you know, the 0.04 whatever degrees a year is really a good indication. For the last decade, every year has been hotter than the previous year. We've broken all sorts of records every year by the month. So right now, climate change is happening. Our ice caps are melting. Temperature of the sea is warming. We have more methane that is being released. So it's just going to be a continuation. We're going to be getting hotter, hotter, hotter temperatures, which, as you say, is going to extend the or increase evaporation. I would like to see the number of years, at least 3 on there. I think that's a really good indication. And I think also the amount of water that we get each year. I think we should get 3 years of average rainfall, basically, before we start thinking about increasing our building on here. And if we get 3 years of average rainfall and then we build for the 4th year and then the 5th year goes back into drought, we need to stop again, you know, until we get our rainfall back up, because, as you say, rainfall is the only thing that is filling the aquifers for us. So I think that was the only comment that I had.
That works good because your time's up.
Okay. Well, great. Okay. Thank you.
Lindy Owen again. I really want to thank Bill for adding the climate metric in, because I mean, I want to go back to asking Rob questions that I haven't heard the answer to. How long do we have drawing from the upper aquifer to blend? How much supply can we pull from the aquifer to blend, and how many years will it last? And what is that amount? We don't know. And again, when we start making decisions based on what we don't know, I want to know what's down there, how long it's estimated to last before we even start talking about all the programs that are going to open the doors to development, because currently I feel like we're struggling for our existence. We're going to lose all our vegetation at this point because we have no septic release going back into the ground. We have it going up to one spot on Broderson, perhaps a couple little places here and there. Again, has saltwater intrusion stopped? And how do we stop saltwater intrusion? We stop using our water supply. That's the only you can put a dam there and say that's it. I mean, if you've got any other ways of doing it, I'd like to know, because I keep hearing that it is stoppable and reversible, which I do not believe it is. And again, our only water is coming from the sky. So we have a limited supply down here. When it's hot, and what Bill brought up does affect everything, when it's hot, What we are using for our outdoors will increase because evaporation. You can feel it. The warm days we've had here, you have to water more. So you're drawing. You're taking more and more water. So, again, if we want to talk about future building, we better figure out what to do with this recycled water and make it useful. Currently, it needs to be cleaned up better so that the farmers will use it. If the farmers are not drawing out, whatever, a quarter of our basin every year, because they're using the recycled water, we have a quarter basin left every year. There's just some logic that I see kind of missing from this whole issue. I also want to know what's the estimated supply in the lower aquifer. Again, I don't see how we can make decisions when you don't know. Are we looking at current use without any other factors that we have 10 years, 20 years, 100 years? Give me an idea. And then I think that we all can work in a more progressive method. I'd like us to be very careful until we know that our water supply is stable and under control before we even talk about putting more houses outside the prohibition, wherever we put them. We need to take care of what we have here, and inviting more development in is insanity. And this county does not seem to understand that yet.
Thank you. You guys are doing really good on the 3 minutes here. I'm telling you, you're right on. Any other? Yeah, Chuck.
Good afternoon. My name is Chuck Cicinia. I'll come in way under 3 minutes. I like measurables, finite measurables. Therefore, chloride metrics, water level metrics, maybe a climate metric. Basin yield metrics are theoretical. That's what we think we can do or we can harvest. But that's changed in over the years, and it's a projection. And I want measurables, I want finites, I want to know what chloride levels are, where the water levels are, and what the climate has been doing. So I don't think basin yield metric is really the one we should be pinning everything on. Thank you. How'd I do?
28 seconds. Any other public comment? Okay, seeing that, I'll bring it back to the committee. Who wants to go first, Bruce?
Well, again, I've been thinking about this for a long time, and if colleagues would like to weigh in, I'd
be happy. Bruce, pardon me, but do you have any answers to the questions that have been raised first? Or,
Mr. Chair, of course, I always, but...
If you had some...
Yeah.
That might be helpful to our discussion.
Okay, I'll try to be brief. Lindy brought up an interesting point that how many years' worth of supply is left. And that's something that we'll think about because it's dynamic, of course. The next question is, well, how much did it rain? And all of the different factors that go into the water cycle. You know, if we have historic drought, how much is left? We can think about that. What you shouldn't do is go to the annual report and look at the fresh water in storage and then divide it by the number of years. That will be a wrong number. Because you'll get like 100, you think, oh, we're great. Well, you'll induce seawater intrusion before that. So we'll take that into account. As to the reversibility of seawater intrusion, I'm sure there's probably people in the audience here, some of the water resource professionals who have had examples in California where they were doing exactly what we were doing, and seawater intrusion, I think Ventura County, Toby's probably here somewhere, is one where they did it. There's other basins in California where they reversed it. So if you can reestablish conditions where water levels increase and you've got more fresh water coming in so that water levels increase, you can physically reverse seawater intrusion. And we even see it on our western boundary with some of our westerly wells. Chlorides move in, chlorides move out, depending on how much it rains and how hard we pump. So we've already seen that as a micro version of that. And I'm sure I'll have more comments later.
Okay. Thank you. Now, Bruce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I think, Bill, you raise a really important point in terms of understanding the dynamics of the basin and looking out into the future. You know, what average rainfall number should we be operating under? And so, at a minimum, it would seem to me that we should have the model rerun with a couple of different couple of different average rainfall numbers going down from where we are. That's testing toward a worst case scenario. Let me see if I can make a slight change in language. Rather than as a climate metric, the average rainfall is really a major parameter of the model. It is something that we have to assume. We can track whether our choice of parameter is meeting reality. But as I am listening to the discussion, I think that the reality of the planning document, which is what we're looking at, needs to achieve a level of sustainability as it's defined in SGMA. That's the kind of thing that the Coastal Commission is going to be looking at. So they're going to be expecting that we do planning based on proper parameter choices, looking out for the foreseeable and even beyond the foreseeable future. So I think one of the questions to ask is, and I thought that the Basin Management Plan did some testing of different future climate scenarios, and maybe we need to review that at a coming meeting, is what have we done there. I think the other thing that we might dig into is that the Coastal Commission has been very active in planning for sea level rise adaptation, and so they have some projections of climate into the future. And so I think my reaction to the kinds of recommendations we make is not so much that we track the rainfall and make decisions on the rainfall. We've seen that happen in a different CSD that actually also happens to be in the second district, who were challenged by making decisions on too short a time frame as they chased one year's rainfall after the next, and it led them into a bit of a bind. So I think that your point is absolutely central to our planning, and we need to test it out so we can come up with a parameter and then have confidence that that's a good planning parameter. The other thing that's a parameter is the amount of conservation, which is really part of the overall consumption question. You know, so if you look at it, it's about a budget balance, right? You've got input, which is only rainfall at this point. You've got consumption, and conservation is a major parameter of consumption. And so I think it's worthwhile to make sure we review what our assumptions about conservation are, because the Title 19 thing was in my mind, a stopgap measure. Because we are in a world of complying with SGMA, we get to be more prescriptive about what kinds of conservation need to happen. This, you know, Title 19 was a voluntary thing. If you wanted to build a house, then you had to go do some retrofits. But I think that it's actually, as we comply with SGMA, the water purveyors are going to be faced with what is a reasonable per connection consumption that we're going to plan for as part of this. And so rather than say, let's go to Title 19 retrofit to build, let's have within our basin management plan a very clear statement of we will be aiming to meet these conservation or consumption targets and making sure that we're actually hitting it. And then the final thing I'll ask, as we talk about timelines, if we talk about phasing things, I mean, you could say, look, allowing new development, we could allow as much new development as we develop new water supply from the upper aquifer with appropriate treatment. I mean, that would be one way of putting that. Say, we'll let new houses be built if they draw their water supply from the upper aquifer, however that manages to increase the supply. But what I wonder in terms of planning and tracking things for the future, whether the technical basis of our basin modeling might need to be extended to a dynamic equilibrium model. And I have forgotten the exact terminology, but right now we're doing our basin modeling and our metrics are based on a static equilibrium. maybe we need to spend the time and effort and money to make a more sophisticated model that can help us understand temporal changes like rainfall in 5-year, 10-year, or 20-year averages. It might be worth our while. So those are my thoughts as we dig in on this.
Yep. No, thank you. I think that was a couple of things I'm just going to piggyback on since I'm the chair. I get to do this. I think the supply and demand issue, I think we need to look at both aspects of it. The conservation, which is really the demand factor, and then the supply that we have available water. So, and I think a couple of the speakers brought that up too, that there's conservation measures in place, and we're not quite sure how those are going to continue, whether they're going to get, you know, more conservation, less conservation. But I think that goes back to the supply and demand aspect of it. I think that's important. I think what Bruce said about running different scenarios would be helpful for our decision making. I don't want to say, you know, we take worst case scenario, but at least we have some alternatives to look at different scenarios, both for supply and demand. So I think those are two important things. Which one of you guys wants to go next? Mark?
Go ahead, Bill.
So
yep.
I think
apparently
we should...
yes, Bill.
Oh, go ahead, Mark. Sorry, Bill. I think we should start moving forward and follow the plan to the best of our ability and what's been laid out. If we hold back now and do some more testing, you know, more testing now before making some decisions and looking at various scenarios, we're going to delay any type of decision making. So I think that there's inside the basin plan, there are checks and balances, and some of these additional modeling that we would do, it wouldn't, hopefully we didn't make the wrong decision that we would take a 180 degrees of the direction we're going. So we start the path, we develop the matrix and set that framework, do the additional analysis, and we can be checking our checks and balances along the way and making deviations. I really would not like to see us just hold back from right now from making any type of decisions. I'd like to move forward with the mindset of what's laid out in the basin plan. And then, I think that the county, they have the land use authority. We're simply going to be looking at the basin and the water in the basin, and the county will have a lot of jurisdiction moving forward in the development. So,
could I sort of respond to that?
Sure.
Carrie, you have to remember this plan is going to be approved by the Coastal Commission. So as far as amending or changing the plan, if we want to make alterations in these criteria, it's a long, long, complicated process. So I think we need to be able to get as close as we can to where we want to be at this point in time.
Yeah, that's a good point. The Coastal Commission did approve our plan, though, too. So I just think we've done so much work, you know, 5-8 years worth of work and study and a lot of detail into this.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm just thinking if there's some way we could do relatively easily and quickly some updates, because some of that information is dated, for lack of a better term. So I'd like to see us, at least in our modeling or whatever we're going to provide the most recent data that we can, and taking in, for example, what Bill brought up today. I mean, some of that stuff obviously is new since the 8 years we've been working on the basin management plan. So,
sure.
And I defer to Bill, but I got some thoughts on framing how we make a recommendation to the LCP.
Okay. I just wanted to comment that in my presentation on a climate or rainfall, I don't care what you call it, metrics, it couldn't stand alone. It has to go along, I think, certainly with the chloride metric. So it would not be alone. But doing it on a running five-year average, which they didn't do up north, you get rid of that problem of jerking 1 year up and 1 year down. We could, I have this my model for prediction and the computer, and you can put in double the rate. You can put 30 inches in for this year, and it still's not going to change the 5-year average that much. So you won't jump in and out of rainfall if you use an average over time.
Yeah, Bruce, go ahead.
Where I was headed, I've been thinking about this for a while. It seems to me that what this committee, first of all, we're talking about two different plans. One's the local coastal program or the land use plan, and the other is the basin management plan. And I agree with Mark. We move forward on implementing the basin management plan. That's what we do.
I think we're all in agreement.
And we're all in agreement with that. Let's charge forward on that. What we need to be able to do is through planning communicate to the Board of Supervisors and the Coastal Commission that our basin management plan results in a sustainable water supply for some whatever level of development we seek here. And I think the way that might be most useful for us to do that is to point out to planning and the Coastal Commission that we are required to comply with SGMA. So the test of our water supply is SGMA compliance. And it's yet to be seen exactly how coastal up and down the state going to respond to SGMA compliance as a measure of sustainable water supply. But it would seem to me that since that's a requirement of one side of government, that coastal ought to respect it. So I think the first thing we should communicate to planning is that we can confirm compliance with SGMA at existing build-out levels by observation of this, that, and the other metric. We're seeing the right trend in chloride metric. We're seeing the right place in basin yield metric. We're seeing the nitrate metric improve, which is really a sideshow. And we can further say that we believe that the programs within the basin management plan can sustain new development to the point of build-out, which is about 19, going from, let's ballpark, 15,000 to 19,000 residents, at a rate that we might need the dynamic modeling to help us understand. You know, that if we say, look, we could grow at a one, let me just pick a number, it's not what I'm proposing, but let's just say, suppose we suggested that at a 1% build-out, we would have to do the following, our basin management plan, 1% per year increase in development, our basin management plan would require this much more supply, consumption held at this level, and we would expect to see basin metrics perform in an appropriate way based on our model. That's all part of SGMA compliance, right? So we have to show other side of the state that we are managing this basin sustainably in the face of whatever level of development we have. So I think we should frame our comments on the local coastal program all about SGMA compliance, because we're going to be held to that standard independent of if anything changes at coastal.
I agree with you, Bruce.
We need to give you some direction, or do you have some ideas, or where are we going at this point?
Staff was certainly looking for as much specificity as you are prepared to give today. We do have some time on this, and I know there are a lot of moving parts. I think the issue with SGMA is interesting in that while we're exempted out, obvious as an adjudicated area, obviously the spirit of SGMA, which is no adverse impacts, is the very heart of what we're doing here. So I know in our last presentation in July, we pulled up the adverse impact elements from SGMA and talked about those. And so, at your staff level and at your level, as you think about the specificity of the metrics, ultimately we're going to be tasked with framing a recommendation for you to actually take some action on. I don't know that we're quite there today, but we've I think gotten some good feedback to bring it back.
I would like, Rob, though, maybe you want an immediate action or near-term action would be to have Spencer Harris rerun this balance with the lower level of water that we've been getting and just see what effect it does have on our plans.
Well, and that's where I was just going to say, I think it's not only Because we've had this discussion. I mean, the demand is much, much less than Spencer ran his models
right.
on
right.
because of the conservation. So I think the models right. need to be run not only with the reduced precipitation
right.
rate that you're showing, but I think it needs to be run with the reduced demand that we're showing through conservation.
Just,
so
yeah,
that's where I was going to say. Yeah.
Absolutely fair. I understand. I see a curve in my head where you could yeah. have a few data points and connect them and just to get a general understanding. I don't think it would take very long and it could probably be done within our contingency, admin contingency.
Yeah, I think that would be something that would be helpful.
And could we review, I mean, I should know this off the top because we approved the basin management plan. Could we maybe next time review the climate change assumptions of the basin management plan, and maybe Carrie could bring whatever she has in terms of expectations on climate change from the coastal side.
Yes.
And I hate to say this, Mr. Chair, but I should be on the road at 3:25. I hope your quorum holds. My alternate is not here today.
Okay. Well, I'd like to get your input because a couple of the last items are dependent upon you, so we'll try to move forward here.
If you want to prioritize them in a different order, I'm happy to do.
Well, I think there's the water conservation program. The presentation on the salt, I think, is something we don't need Bruce here for, correct?
I think that's correct, Mr. Chair. I think maybe we can switch those items to give Bruce an opportunity.
Because there is, we do have some questions about the status of the MOU, too.
Right.
So I think we obviously need you here for that discussion.
Right.
So why don't we just slip 3 and 2 right now?
Okay. So, Kathy, you'll be on very shortly here. Okay, do you? Okay, yeah. Thanks, Jenna. Appreciate it. Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'll present this item. So at our last meeting, the direction that was given to staff was to go and prepare a memorandum of understanding and secure funding for our water conservation program that we talked about last April, potentially from available wastewater project funds. And so I want to thank county staff for doing a lot of legwork to chase down. You know, as they were thinking about the elements of the MOU, the first step was to identify the source of the cash so that the provisions of the MOU could reflect whatever funding entity had initially identified that cash. And so staff had gone to the various funding sources. I won't spend a lot of time, but let me just list the major funding sources to the wastewater project so you understand where the cash came from and how that disposition affects conservation program. The first is USDA funds, which were a substantial portion of the collection system. And in discussions with USDA, that's not a funding source that is available at this point. It's been fully expended under their loan agreement for USDA, so that's not a source of funds for conservation rebates. The state revolving fund loan paid for a lot of the wastewater plant, treatment plant. In discussions with state board staff, they don't allow expenditure of their funds for elements that exist and would be owned by private property. So you can do community-wide conservation like leak detection or something on a purveyor system, but couldn't offer rebates to individuals under their loan program. So those two funding sources were the majority of the money that went into the wastewater project, and neither one was available for conservation rebates. The assessment funds that were collected as part of the assessment vote that happened a number of years ago, that assessment report did not include conservation as a special benefit for those assessment funds. It was a general benefit, and so those aren't an available source. The last source was the one, we focused the most on, and that was the Department of Water Resources grant through the IRWM process, and those funds could potentially be available for this series of rebates that the committee's talked about before. But you need to understand the timing and approval elements as we begin to unearth this with DWR. County did a good job I think drawing them out and saying, here's what we're trying to do. We want to do outdoor conservation. DWR didn't say no, but they had previously approved the use of their grant funds based on a very detailed implementation project that was approved by the Board of Supervisors. That implementation plan has the exact rebate amounts and all the different programmatic elements that the county had previously put in place for the indoor conservation that DWR ultimately funded. And basically the feedback from them is, well, you could amend that, but if, you know, we can't just write you a check for it. If you want to use these funds, you need to amend the implementation plan, make sure you're showing us that you can provide the same long-term benefits that you proved to us when you got the grant, you know, 20-year benefits, and then we'll consider your revisions. So with that feedback from DWR, the MOU is not yet drafted because the secure funding source isn't there yet. Of course, staff would love to bring to you some next steps as to how we can advance this. And then I know we're halfway through lateral connections. We have, you know, some percentage, maybe 25%, I think, is the last number, who have sanitized and kept their septic tanks. But I'm getting questions about rebates out there from the community also. So if you desire to move this forward, our next step in response to DWR's request would be to amend the detailed implementation plan, take the measures we talked about in April, incorporate those into a recommended plan revision that could go before the Board of Supervisors and ultimately be shared with DWR before their funding would be released. As to the available dollar amount, it's going to be, in terms of the DWR source, it's far less than the $1 million that we had hoped to bring to you. I've heard values of $400,000. I've heard values that are less than that, $250,000, somewhere like that. We'll bring back those precise amounts, but it's going to be less than the million. So that's the status of the water conservation rebates that we're pursuing. And I know county's got some representation here, but be happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, I have a question. So obviously with the repurposing of the existing tanks, timing is critical, but it sounds like from what we're talking about here, this is a 3, 4, 5, 6 month process if we have to go to Coastal Commission.
At least before the Board of Supervisors, who staff feels that we can do it faster.
Okay.
And we'd certainly like the opportunity, Mr. Chair.
And the other question was, does the flood control district have the ability to do some of this funding? That's not on the list here.
It's not, and that because that's not a wastewater project funding source at this point. But I know in previous discussions around this table, the opportunity to perhaps leverage some flood control district funds was mentioned and could be put on the table.
Okay.
Glad to have Bruce here for that.
So, yeah, if I might, Mr. Chairman, just add on with the IRWM Department of Water Resources grant, what we also hear from staff is that the reimbursement process through DWR is extremely cumbersome and that those funds could most likely be spent more efficiently on other aspects of the project. I think, you know, I am working with staff to see what money might be broken free to front. You know, we were hoping that there might be as much as $1 million sitting in the wastewater project that could be advanced to this. That looks like it's not going to be workable. So I'm working on seeing where else there are funds and how much those funds are that could serve the same purpose. And it's a little premature because as I reach out to grab these funds, it turns out other people want those funds too, and so we have a bigger picture to look at. So, in terms of the funding, I would just ask a little patience on figuring out where we can find the money. But there's work to be done in the interim, as you point out in the staff report, and I think staff is ready to work on getting the necessary approvals teed up and ready to go, and I'm confident we can find a funding source to get this started and in the not too distant future. The other point that I'd make, and it comes up, it comes up often. This seems to be very much about reusing septic tanks. The rebates for that are not for the purpose of sanitizing and saving, closing up a septic tank. That has to be done at the property owner's expense. It is about the same price as abandoning a septic tank by filling it. So we continue our outreach. We continue to talk to contractors. We continue to push the idea that we think there are opportunities, but sanitizing and closing a septic tank or abandoning it, it doesn't have anything to do with the water balance here. It doesn't affect the water balance. It is the reuse of that that is worthy of a rebate that actually does start to displace other water sources. So, I believe that we will continue and hopefully increase the rate at which tanks are saved for future reuse. I'm working with staff to get the necessary formal Coastal Commission approvals, the modifications to the water conservation plan. We've got ideas how that could be moved through the process pretty simply, and on a parallel track looking for the funding to kickstart this. So more in a month or two.
What's the anticipated schedule I'm just looking at your recommendation to direct you to prepare a draft of the water conservation implementation plan. I mean, are we talking our next meeting, or how long do you think that would take?
That's what staff, what I would like to shoot for, and okay. if staff's available.
That would be the goal then, okay.
That would be the goal. I mean, we really, if we can queue it up, there might be other funding sources that can be made available. So let's do it.
I would just like to comment on what Bruce just said, because I and many others I know in our community, we did the repurpose. And what I found out is that everyone is doing the same thing that I did, which is just take a downspout, one downspout from the house, and run it into the septic tank. There's no means, no one has installed pumps or anything like that to take the water out of their septic tank. So the only way it's going to come out is to go into their existing leach fields over time. And so I'm now having great doubts on the advisability of having a rebate for just repurposing your tank for some time in the future.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood, because you can pump, if you have it sanitized, you can pump it out.
You can, but you have to put in a lot of equipment to do it, and no one is doing it.
I know you have to leave.
That's fine.
Do you have anything, Mark? So I'll have public comment here.
Just going back to the draft, so if we did give direction for it to come back next meeting, how much time is involved in preparing that draft? Is it something that's cumbersome, or?
I think the matrix is already there, and I don't think it would be cumbersome.
Okay.
Okay, so with that, then we'll go to public comment. Thank you.
Again, my name is Chuck Cicinia. The bigger big picture is that there was a $5 million commitment for water conservation in the coastal development permit. That's the ultimate big picture. Bill, you just got to go down to Ace and get an $80 siphon pump. You leave a 4-inch port into your septic tank. You drop one hose into that, little vegetable oil to prime the pump. The other hose goes to your irrigation system. Don't let a contractor tell you that he has to install an electrical panel, some kind of sub panel, a permanent pump installation. I plug my pump into an electrical outlet, and it's good to go. I mean, for $150 all total, all the downspout diversion and everything, it's not a big deal. The contractors don't want to do this. For some reason, they think there's liability involved. I hear that they're telling people that the septic tanks will corrode and crumble over time, that they're going to disintegrate, and why that would be, I'm not really sure, unless you had an old redwood tank or something. But no, don't buy into that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chuck.
Patrick McGibney again. Dollar for dollar conservation is the best way to save the basin. And what Chuck said, that we, the county, and was part in the CWP, the conditions of approval was that you would use $5 million for conservation. That was reconfirmed today. I talked to Daniel Robinson of the Coastal Commission, and he said absolutely the county is going to be held to that. A few months ago, I talked to Wade Horton, the director of Public Works, and he showed me a printout of where the money's going, how much is there, and everything. And in conservation, there was at the time $2.8 million that was still there. He guaranteed me that there was money that was still there for the conservation, and that was going to get used. As you pointed out, the USDA funding and the SFR funding is not to be used for private purposes. That needs to be used for construction and for the plant itself. That's where the money should have gone to, or is supposed to go to, and not the $3.4 million that was given by DWR for conservation. That money should still be available, and according to Wade, it was available. At least $2.8 million of it is still available. I don't think you're going to get any funding from a 218 vote from the public. Personally, I'm not going to vote for that because I think the county has misrepresented themselves and has not used the money the way it should have been used, and I don't trust the county to be using conservation money if we vote for more of it to go in the 218 vote. So according to the Coastal Commission, $5 million is supposed to be used. It will be used, and the county has to do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Lynette.
Lynette Tornatsky. I get kind of tired of people ragging on the county about not using that money simply because there isn't an end to this project. I mean, you still have conservation measures you have to do in the future. There are people that need to be educated. And who knows what's going to happen with the water situation, which is actually why I got up here. Our legal counsel at our last CSD meeting went into a fairly interesting and depressing question about our tanks being repurposed to be able to draw water at some county-led place where we can get water, put it in a tank, bring it home, stick it in the ground. And I'm just wondering if we could have an update on that at some future meeting. And it was told that obviously it's pretty stupid that you can't use this water on a home situation. You can only use it in a community like park, I don't know, of an apartment complex or something. So it seems to me that maybe it's not huge enough to hit on the bigger picture that you had the whole point on earlier, but there are some of us who aren't repurposing our tanks for our drowned spouts because that's already repurposed somewhere else in our yard, and I would like to keep my trees alive by not using potable water, but by using this recycled water. There's probably a lot of other people who would like to do that too, but right now it seems like it's in limbo, something we didn't know. So if that, you know, the committee that's trying to fix this thing, let's keep on top of that and see where they are. Thanks.
Thank you.
Lindy Owen again. Again, we have clarity that the $5 million was supposed to be used strictly for conservation. The last I looked, since the county does not give us updates on our wastewater project anymore, they haven't done that for 4 months at least, last I heard was $2.4 million was available. Now, Mr. Gibson keeps saying that we're going to get to the idea of repurposing these septic tanks, and supposedly 3 months ago the county was going to send out a postcard to the contractors to remind them that we are encouraging that they get filled with water. And, yeah, there is future conservation efforts to be had, but it's not through advertising with Barnett and Cox, who did the worst job of advertising anything I've ever seen and used up over $40,000 of CSD money. I would really like to see the conservation be put towards. The most logical thing is to get tanks in people's yards or repurpose their septic tanks, get this water to their homes. If it's an HMO, it is allowable. So there's bizarre rules. California is coming to terms with drought, and they are making changes. We didn't used to be able to put gray water from our washing machines out. We didn't used to be able. These are all changes that are coming because we need to do something to repurpose and reuse this water and stop wasting our drinking supply. So that is where conservation could be spent. If Mr. Gibson doesn't believe that saving one-third of what is potentially used in each household every day for outdoor use is of any value, then fine. I will wait to hear, you know, a better description of what he thinks one-third of our water basin, where he could bring it in trucks or something. But I encourage that the money that's left from the CS from the our wastewater project, you either take it off all our bills and just admit that you didn't want to use it to conserve water, or put it to use. We'd really appreciate it. You've been hearing from us for 3 years now. Thank you.
Thank you. Jeff, any other public comment after
Jeff? And then I'd like to make a response, Mr. Chairman, and then I will have to leave.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll close public comment after you, Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Again, Jeff Edwards. First of all, I'd like to submit to your group that conservation is not your core mission. Not at all. Moreover, let's keep this thing simple. Let's not turn every topic into a long, protracted debate ad nauseum. Can we benefit from additional conservation? That's the first question. I believe we can. Mr. Gibson's, I'm not sure where he stands on it. So, is there conservation available? Okay, let's say there is. Number two, how do we pay for it? Why use public funds? Why talk about an MOU? Why get the county to kick down a couple hundred grand or whatever? Let's let the private sector fund this just the way they funded Title 19 for the last 6 or 7 years. Why make it more complicated? Take the existing program, apply the boundary, make it coterminous with the basin boundary, make all indoor plumbing options available. We know there are thousands of 1.6 gallon per minute or per flush toilets in this town. That consumption be cut in half, state of the art's 0.8 gallons per flush. There are thousands of 2 gallons per minute shower heads. State of the art is 1 gallon per minute. So the water is available to save or conserve. How do we pay for it becomes the question. So let's just change Title 19. You could do that at your next meeting. Make that suggestion to the supervisor and let him see what he can do instead of just running in circles, chasing our tails, doing nothing.
Thank you. With that, we'll close public comment. I know you got to go, Bruce,
yeah,
so we'll let you.
And I hope we can. I'll stay. I don't think we have much more to do on this. Let me explain it this way. Yes, there is money in the wastewater project to do conservation. The Coastal Commission has indicated that they will permit the money that's in the wastewater project to be used on the outdoor conservation and other measures that we're talking about. The problem we have found is that the funding sources that put money into the wastewater project won't or make it very difficult for us to move that money to the new desired uses. So what we're doing is trying to find a new source of funding to bring in. This is the work that I referenced, to try to provide flexible funding that can be used for the outdoor kind of conservation that we want to do. So that's a simple. People go on and on at length about the money that's in the project. We are simply found that it's impossible to very, very difficult to move that money where we want to do it. So we'll figure it out with a different funding source, I'm confident.
The last observation that I'd make that relates to Bill's comment about the actual reuse of the septic tank to water landscape irrigation. I think that, you know, Mr. Cesena should be applauded for putting a pump in his septic tank and use it to water his landscape. I think the reality for most homeowners is, though, that there is no financial incentive for them to go to that extra expense and effort to water their landscape because of, among other things, they can simply buy the water from their water purveyor and apply it to their landscape, and that's an easier way to go. So I think that there is future work to be done in terms of crafting the playing field here so that so there are disincentives to putting potable water outdoors on landscape. And I'm fully supportive of moving in that direction. When that happens, then the relative attractiveness of using a repurposed septic tank increases, and you might start seeing some of that. And if we can add a rebate to encourage people in that direction, great. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if there's any other aspects of this item that we need to discuss at this point, but I look forward to the plan coming back next month.
Thank you.
And
yeah, I would just add one thing to what you just said. Part of what we've been talking about is the clean and seal for the repurposing. So, and I want people to make sure they crystal clear understand that. You can go ahead and clean and disinfect your tank and seal it right now. And then somewhere down the road, when the potable water supply goes down or your potable water rates get so high that you're not going to do it, then there is the financial incentive there to use the tank. So yeah. I'm encouraging people, even if they're not going to use it today, to go ahead and clean and seal it, because there's no additional cost to that.
Exactly my point.
Okay. Okay, and I did have just a comment to Lynette's comment, and I know we've talked about this ad nauseum, but because I am working on a state committee with the reuse of the recycled water from sewer treatment plants, or recycled plants, I guess is what we call them now.
Water recycling facilities. Yeah,
thank you, whatever. Formerly known as a wastewater treatment
sewer
plant.
Yes. It used to be known as a sewer plant.
But, and I would just say this, I mean, this is in flux right now. Right now, state law precludes it from happening. And as Lynette pointed out, there's anomalies in this. An HOA can use it for landscapes, but an individual property owner can't. I mean, but that's the way the law reads. So that's one of the things that, like I said, I'm involved in statewide and working on this. And I think within the next 3 to 4 years, it's the hope or expectation that there would be a change in the state law that this type of, pardon me, the water that is safe to use for crops would be safe to use on individual residents. But again, it's a state law and it takes time.
Okay. With that, my apologies for an early departure, and look forward to seeing you next month.
Well, you'll have to get an update on the salt and nutrient management.
Yeah, do we have time for that, Mr. Chair, or do you want to punt that to another meeting?
I will wait eagerly.
Yeah.
I mean, we normally run till, I mean, it's up to you guys. We've been running till 4 till our last few meetings. If that's fine with you, I say we go to 4.
You know, Kathy's here.
I continue. And
yeah, let's do it. She's been looking forward to it for days. And
Courtney's here. I mean, we got the full boat here, right? You have to promise us, Kathy, this isn't a 4-hour presentation.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for your time. My name is Kathy Martin. I'm County San Luis Obispo, and I'm going to present the salt nutrient management plan elements. So basically, the presentation is an introduction and high-level overview of the salt nutrient management plan, requirements for the recycled water permit for the Los Osos Water Recycling Facility. The SNP plan is still being developed by the county. The framework of the SNP will reference and align with numerous reports, including Los Osos Groundwater Basin Plan, the BMC Annual Report, and Cleith and Harris, and project reports and permits from the Los Osos Water Recycling Facility. Okay, background overview. In 2009, the State Water Board established the Recycled Water Policy. The policy required the development of a salt nutrient management plan for recycled water treatment plants, such as Los Osos Recycling Water Facility. The SNMP will allow treatment facility to enroll in the statewide 2014 general waste discharge requirements for recycled water. This will help streamline the permit process for the plant. The permit will also allow the start of recycled water to agricultural irrigation. And the current facility permit is for landscape irrigation, which is for urban water use for schools and parks. Okay, some element categories in the SNMP. Basically, we have the first one on top is the groundwater-based environmental setting. The second one is the source analysis, then the monitoring plan, then water recycling goals and implementation measures. These will be discussed in the later slides. So the groundwater basin description environmental setting, this information will be referenced from the groundwater basin plan in the annual report from the BMC. It covers geology, hydrogeology, existing background groundwater and quality conditions and beneficial uses such as irrigation of crops and lawns. Another part of the S&P is source analysis. So this is based off the information will be referred from the basin plan and the annual report from the BMC, and samples and data collected from the Los Osos water recycling plant for the permit requirements. So first you have the conceptual model. It's a simple two-dimensional drawing of the groundwater basin. You have the water balance. It's groundwater flowing in the annual cycle and storage inflow and outflow. And the salt nutrient balance, it's a two-part category, a source ID'd, such as nitrates and salts that we've discussed earlier. It will also comprise of loading concentration analysis. We plan to use this data from the basin plan and the annual report and collect samples from the treatment plant. Another category is the anti-degradation analysis. This is regulated for existing groundwater that will be receiving recycled water. Basically, the regional board wants to make sure that the existing groundwater does not degrade the addition of recycled water to the groundwater. This will be performed by analysis and calculations of the chemical concentrations to the groundwater basin. We're having Cleith Harris perform a technical memorandum to cover this area for the anti-deg analysis. Another part of the soil nature management plan is the monitoring plan. The monitoring plan is still being developed, but the plan will reference the Los Osos Basin in the 2015 annual report and permit requirements for the Los Osos Recycle Treatment Facility. So it covers water quality, salt nutrient monitoring, water balance monitoring, trend analysis, and for the SNMP data management reporting, monitoring data will be compiled and submitted to the regional board at least every 3 years. The county will need to coordinate everything with the BMC for the data. So the next part of the plan are the goals. The goals will reference the Los Osos Basin Plan and the annual report. And will also be for the permit requirements for Los Osos Recycling Facility. It have different goals here. It gets sustainable salt and water balance. This is to protect historical and existing water quality. Load reduction to reduce the total amount of pollutant entering the waste streams or groundwater. And water recycling, for example, reducing groundwater use for using recycled water for irrigation. This will increase the volume of the groundwater over time. And you have beneficial uses too. And water conservation, Los Osos is doing a really outstanding job on that part. So for implementation, you have performance measures here. They're metrics-based, used to provide on an analytical basis for decision-making. And from here, we also have adaptive management to maintain flexibility to adapt to changing conditions in the basin. And typical steps are design a conceptual model on known conditions. The other one is management plan for goals, objectives, and activities. Then the next one is the monitoring plan to develop. The third one is implementation management and monitoring plans. And then you analyze data and communicate results for the evaluation. They use these results to adopt and to learn. So with this management, this will bring flexibility to the changing conditions in the basin. So this is the base of the salt nutrient management plan. And for the next steps, I'd like to bring this back to BMC in November to go over the draft SNMP. There's also in mid-November, I'll have the draft out for public review for 21 days. In the fall of that, in late November, we plan to host a community meeting to present an SNMP to the community. And December 12th, we ask that the DMC and water purveyors to submit letters to support the SNMP. Then this will go to the Board of Supervisors in January, followed by submittal to the Regional Water Quality Board. So it's a very simple process right now. I'll go into better detail during the draft SNMP. And any questions at the time?
Go ahead, Rob.
Mr. Chair, just to note for the community, this is really important because it speaks to the long-term health of our, particularly our upper basin, in terms of Broaddrson discharge and everything else. So we look forward to this and thank the county for bringing it forward.
No, I appreciate the initial thing. Even though this isn't an action item, it is on our action item agenda, so we'll take public comment.
Okay.
But normally presentations are just presentations, but...
Lindy Owen, I kind of want to go back and, I mean, we're talking about the salt and nutrients that the farmers currently are not interested in taking out of our recycled water. Has been turned down by most of the farm community in our basin?
No, this is for so we can have agricultural users use the irrigation recycled water. Right now, they currently can't underneath the irrigation landscape permit. Right now, only urban users can use it, which is the parks, the schools, and the golf courses. So this is helping with the permit requirements for this. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I'm actually confused because I thought that this was... recycled water, mm-hmm. 800,000 gallons a day expected, more or less. Right now, 400 is going to Broaddrson. We want the farmers to use it to offset. That was the whole big idea, is if they stopped using drinking supply and used recycled water, then we would be way ahead. But what I understand is the farmers have turned it down because of the salt nutrients are too high. They do not want it. So we've lost out. Part of the whole reason for having the recycled water in our sewer was to offset ag use. And currently we're selling it to dry land farmers, which, as far as I can tell, is just a way of dumping water. And then secondly, Broaddrson, could you explain how Broaddrson is expected to work? It's supposed to take 14 years to get through the clay lens barrier, and then it's supposed to go into what I believe is already saltwater intruded area of the basin. So I just, by putting water there and trying to force it into a head of seawater, I really am confused how that helps us do anything for the basin and improving it. And you spoke about the upper... You said it's the long-term health of the upper basin. Is that what you're talking about, the Broaddrson disposing into? Thank you.
Thank you, Lindy. Any other public comment? Okay, we'll close public comment. I appreciate, but in the future, we take the questions and then respond at the end.
Thank you.
So, Rob, do you have some comments? Here?
Just a few thoughts.
I think the Broaddrson comment would be a good one to address.
I think it's really important that folks understand, since it's just such a substantial part of the wastewater project. So, Broaddrson...
The recycled project, wouldn't we just...
right, recycling project. Broaddrson recharges Zone C, our upper aquifer, directly. And, in fact... When you look at the impacts of the wastewater project on our groundwater basin, without Broaddrson, we'd have a real deficit in our upper aquifer. So the need to return that water to Zone C, if you even ignore the lower aquifer, is a very important part of the Broaddrson element of the project. That's also the portion that, if you have water quality issues going in at Broaddrson, those will show up down gradient in Zone C as we look to produce from that zone over the years. You know, the nitrates will clean up. We don't want to get out of the nitrate issue just to have a salt issue. So that's all focused on Zone C. Now, in the higher water depth that you have in Zone C, you will push more water down to the lower aquifer. And it won't just happen, you know, west of the seawater front. It'll happen on a broad front. That will provide a benefit to seawater intrusion. But most of this issue really relates to that upper aquifer, since that's such a primary source to that zone. When it comes to the farmers, this is just something, a step that has to be gone through before they can give any of the water, even to the dry land farmers. They'd have to go through this step because the current permit says it's just for urban uses. So hope that's clear. But this is an important element regardless. So.
Thank you. Do you have anything to add?
No, I think he did a nice job.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay, with that then, we'll go for public comment on items not on the agenda. Okay, well, you're going to have one last chance to talk, Lindy.
I just appreciate that you guys are present. It's very sad that we spent 8 years kind of getting here. And I too, would like to see some just common sense approaches. I don't think we need to, Mr. Gibson talked about doing further studies. I think we have good staff. Rob knows this basin inside and out, as does Mark, and most of us have learned a lot about it. So I hope we can come to some terms to get people to conserve as much as possible. There are still wells with no meters on them, and there are people who have huge, substantial green lawns. And are they helping our basin? Are they part of this community or not? I believe they're not at this point. So as soon as any way we can include them, which, you know, I hope Sigma will give us the foundations for setting up a permit, just putting meters onto those wells to know how much they're using. And I think we should be funding that out of the basin management plan so that it's not an expense to them. It's just more knowledge is really important. So, thank you.
Thank you, mm-hmm. Lindy. Any other public comment? Okay, seeing none. I was going to say we'd adjourn to the 19th, but at this point we will work with everybody to figure out what our next meeting date is, and we'll get it posted online as soon as Rob and I can figure this out, and then we'll try to get it done this week.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank everybody for their participation and interest.